But here's the thing, I can't prove that, but that's where it came from, and that and what I can prove is that you can find details like this if you know how to use web search engines. So you've been listening to Press Watch. Coming up, paraphragging with Daniel Lazaro about his latest article that asks, is Saudi Arabia the Middle East's next failed state at 10? Air Cascadia. So stay tuned to your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And stay tuned to 90.7 FM in Cascadia and other frequencies and via KBOO.FM. My shout out to all the ships at sea.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the screening of Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution, on Sunday, October 21st at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution gives one answer to the question, what happens when the community you need is not the community you have? Queer Core shows the development of the movement through the rise of artists who used radical queer identity to push back equally against gay assimilation and homophobic culture. The film features Bruce LaBruce, G.B. Jones, John Waters, Tom Jennings, Team Dresch, and many more. Again, that's the screening of Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution, on Sunday, October 21st, 7:30, at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest today is Daniel Lazar, author of several books, and he writes articles for Nation Magazine and Consortium News. And the one we're going to talk about is really kind of prophetic. Title is Saudi Arabia, the Next Failed State? Question mark. I don't know if you need a question mark. Anyway, that's the... This article was written and published before the this whole Khashoggi affair. So anyway, Daniel Lazar, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me.
Well, like I said, this article is prophetic. And one thing that sort of jumped out at me when I read it was that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is losing his grip.
Yeah. He's in big trouble. He was in trouble before the Khashoggi incident broke out, but he's in bigger trouble now. But the really important thing is the Al-Saud, the House of Saud, are really in big trouble.
Well, in what way?
Well, the regime is very fragile. It's rotten. Just rotten. It's like, you know, like a piece of wood that's been eaten by worms. It's going to fall to dust in your hands. they've been propped up by the United States for a decade after decade, which has given them a unlimited guarantee of security. And as a result, they've been able to carry on, but they're profoundly corrupt. They're riven by deep conflicts, which they have no way of resolving. Their economy is completely dysfunctional. They are very rich in some ways, but very poor in other ways. And as a consequence, this Khashoggi incident has just sort of exposed their weakness to the world. That they're just paralyzed, and I think the regime itself is crumbling.
Well, in your article, you mentioned that Mohammed bin Salman's economic program is stalled, and you write about gunfire in Riyadh, and here this crown prince is sleeping on his yacht because he's afraid to kind of, I guess, bed down any place where people could get him. So can you tell us more about that?
Well, yes. I mean, last April, there was a full hour of heavy gunfire near the Royal Palace in Riyadh, and it was never really fully explained, and there were all kinds of rumors that immediately broke out that the crown prince had been killed in a coup attempt. And then there was a report a few weeks ago that he's taken to sleeping on his $500 million yacht in the Red Sea port of Jeddah because he's so afraid for his personal safety. But the point is that he is surrounded by enemies, and he has fewer and fewer friends. This is before Khashoggi, and now that's even more true. He is increasingly violent, cruel, tyrannical. Last November, he herded dozens of the richest Saudis into the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh, where some were reportedly beaten and tortured, and they were essentially shaken down to the tune of $100 billion or more. He's widely hated. The royal family in Saudi Arabia consists of thousands of princes, and they're heavily factionalized. He's a member of one faction, but other factions are thirsting for revenge because his behavior is increasingly erratic, and he's alienated so many people in the kingdom. And no one really quite knows of a way out of the problem.
Well, you mentioned that a scholar, Ibn Khaldun, a scholar from the Middle Ages, talked about the life of a dynasty is usually three generations. And that actually brought to mind some remark. I heard a quote from one of the Saudi rulers that his father, he said that his father rode a camel and he's driving a car. His son is going to be flying a plane, but the grandson will be back on the camel again.
Yeah, that was the emir of Dubai, if I'm correctly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but at the neighboring state. But yeah, the idea is that his father rode a camel. He rides a Mercedes, and his son will ride a camel. Ibn Khaldun is a fascinating guy. He was a scholar in what's now Tunisia, mostly in the 14th century. And he had a theory, the three-generational theory of Islamic dynasties. That is, that they originate in the desert as nomads, afire with puritanism and fundamentalism. They sweep into the cities to punish the corrupt and luxury-loving city dwellers who have grown lax in the observance of the law. And then the ascetic nomads then succumb to the pleasures of urban life, at which point they grow corrupt and lax, and at some point another nomadic band takes shape in the desert, sweeps them away, and the cycle starts all over again. And Ibn Khaldun said that it took three generations for this cycle to last, and remarkably, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, is the first of the third generation to take control. He's not king. He's merely crown prince, but he's king in all but name. And so it's remarkable how Ibn Khaldun's theories are working out. I just wanted to say that the problem they face is that Ibn Saud, the founder of the Saudi state in 1932, had something like 90 children, 45 sons, and an equal number of daughters by 22 wives. And as a consequence, he's estimated to have 2,000 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. if MBS goes, it's not clear who his successor would be. There'd be a lot of claimants for the throne. The line of succession is very unclear. In fact, there is no formal line of succession succession, and as a consequence, it has the makings for a real Donnybrook.
Well, see, every few years, you know, there's some new Saudi king, and he's usually some old guy in his 70s or maybe pushing 80 and not very good health. And, you know, this is kind of a gerontocracy or something like that. It's really a weird situation. And then along comes MBS, this young guy. I think he's just barely 30 years old, you know, full of fire and brimstone. And he's going to shake up everything. He's going around killing people, imprisoning people, and where's it all leading to?
Well, his father is King Salman,
mm-hmm.
and he assumed the throne at age 79. He suffers from Alzheimer's. He's a very frail old man. There's a picture of him flying into Moscow and trying to descend a moving escalator type stairway down from the plane to the tarmac, and the escalator gets stuck at halfway, so he's got to descend the steps himself, and the guy can barely do it. He is a frail old man who's only intermittently lucid. So he appointed his son, and he appointed his son for two reasons. One was to get the economy moving again, and the other was to restore Saudi Arabia's international standing, because the U.S. was in the final stages of negotiating its nuclear accord with Iran, which was going to radically alter the balance of power in the Persian Gulf. But MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, has failed royally on both counts. Capital is fleeing the country. Unemployment is rising. The economy is as undiversified and oil dependent as ever. And this Khashoggi affair is going to leave the economy even more isolated than it was before. As you know, he has a big business conference meeting festival scheduled for next week in Riyadh. They call it the Davos of the Desert, named after the famous confab in Davos, Switzerland, and everybody's pulling out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy is poison. He's toxic. And so Saudi Arabia is isolated economically, and also on the foreign affairs front, one of the first things that MBS did was to invade Yemen, to launch an air war on Yemen, and that has been a catastrophe. It has caused causing mass famine. The whole world is alarmed and frightened at what's going on. It's killed tens of thousands of people, and it's costing the kingdom $50 billion a year, which it really can't afford. He has failed. He also invaded Bahrain. He kidnapped the prime minister of Lebanon and held him prisoner for a couple of weeks. He tried to quarantine Qatar, the neighboring emirate. He has just essentially behaved like a bull in a china shop, and rather than than getting Saudi Arabia out of its problems, he's sunk it down deeper. So the guy's a disaster, and I think it's quite clear that he will be forced to step down at some sooner rather than later.
Well, the guy is clearly unhinged. I wonder why did he go after Jamal Khashoggi?
Because he's isolated. He's increasingly tyrannical. He thinks he can do whatever he wants, and also he's a very provincial guy. He doesn't understand the world. He was not educated abroad. He was educated at King Saud University in Riyadh, where he was, you know, where he was treated like royalty, which he of course is. I mean, he's a guy who grew up in fantastic wealth, surrounded by yes men, telling him he was, the most brilliant thing under the sun from the time he was 2 years old on. So the guy, ordinary people, we go through life, we're bruised and battered, and we learn, okay? But he has had the opposite. He's been completely cosseted, surrounded by yes men, and as a result, he hasn't learned a thing. He's a big baby in a burnous, and he's a big vicious baby, and he had no idea what the world reaction would be to the Khashoggi murder, which is, of course, just totally vicious. And so he's now taken aback. He's startled. He's embarrassed. He's been thrown off balance by the global reaction, and he doesn't know what to do.
Well, the U.S. is enabling him, trying to cook up some sort of excuse. Trump was talking about, there was some kind of rogue hit squad or a botched kidnap, as though that was some kind of excuse. What's the latest? The latest we know about the whole affair, that Khashoggi went to the Saudi embassy in Istanbul. He had to get some papers regarding his divorce. And then what happened after that, I guess what I hear is that the Saudi ambassador or whatever sort of made a little small talk while this hit squad emerged from some room and they grabbed him. He tried to flee. He couldn't, and they grabbed him and started, injected him with something, which may or may not have killed him. If it didn't, they started cutting up his fingers off while he was still alive. I mean, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
The brutality is just amazing. Do we know any more than that?
That's pretty much it. And apparently we know that they flew a autopsy specialist armed with a bone saw in for the operation. We also know that something else very important. We know that the hit squad traveled into Istanbul and out of Istanbul on a airplane company controlled by MBS.
Hmm.
So this guy all but drove the getaway car. Now, it seems to me quite clear that that MBS is, this deed, is at his doorstep. I know that Trump and Pompeo are hoping desperately that he'll come up with an excuse that will get him off the hook, but he's there. It looks highly unlikely. This is, it's clear that he is guilty of this crime.
Well, I just read today that a Turkish news outlet called Yeni Safak reported that one of the 15 in the hit squad was killed in a car accident in Riyadh.
Yes, that's what I heard too. That's pretty amazing, huh? So we have no idea what's going on there. There are rumors that MBS may be going into exile. There are rumors, that maybe there may be a coup attempt. But let me just stress one thing: the U.S. is staring down the barrel of the biggest crisis in the Middle East since the Shah of Iran fled in 79. And in some ways, it's even worse. We could very easily see the Libyanization of Saudi Arabia, where a huge infighting in the royal family goes beyond words and arguments and leads to gunfire. And if that happens, we could see rival militias fighting in the streets. We could see the military involved. We could see the entry of Al-Qaeda and ISIS into the whole melee. So we could see, I think it's entirely possible that we'll see the Libyanization. You know, Libya now is a country torn by militias, in utter chaos. Slavery has been brought back. And I think it's entirely possible that we will see the same process in Saudi Arabia. And if it does, then control of the Persian Gulf could rapidly escape U.S. hands.
Well,
and the Persian Gulf is the key to America's global power.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most important choke point in the world, and the U.S. has used it to essentially regulate the energy flow. And if that somehow slips from the U.S. grasp, the consequences will be incalculable.
Well, I keep hearing on NPR that, we don't really need Saudi oil. We are energy independent. I don't think that is true. I mean, they base that on this kind of little upsurge of oil from fracking, which is a sort of a losing way of getting oil. It diminishes very fast. So we are not as energy independent as we think.
Well, I'm not sure how much the U.S. alone needs Persian Gulf oil,
mm-hmm.
but the Persian Gulf allows the U.S. To regulate the flow of oil across the world,
mm-hmm.
to China, to Asia, to India, etc. And if the U.S. should lose control, the U.S. has invested literally trillions of dollars in militarizing the Persian Gulf. There's some of the biggest U.S. naval and military facilities in the Persian Gulf. My personal estimate is that it's the U.S. has invested $16 trillion over the last 40 years in a Persian Gulf military buildup. And if the control of the Persian Gulf were to slip from U.S. fingers, U.S. leverage over the global economy would be severely affected.
Hmm. Well, one thing that, kind of sticks in my mind is that so much of the situation is a result of past U.S. Moves, like Libya. We helped destabilize Libya. And that was one of Hillary Clinton's little projects. The Al-Qaeda grew out of Zbigniew Brzezinski's supporting the Mujahideen in Afghanistan with the hope of getting the Soviets to invade, and we see how that turned out. The Soviets came and went, and we're still in Afghanistan. And, we had this big feud with Iran, which compared to Saudi Arabia is really kind of a paragon of virtue almost. And that is a result of our overthrowing a legitimate ruler back in 1953. So it's like our foreign policy establishment, it doesn't need a Donald Trump to bring about chaos, but that's sort of like the icing on the cake, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, like the U.S. empire has had a wild ride. I mean, plenty of emperors have dreamed of conquering the world, but the United States is the only one that has come close. But American power is highly leveraged, and since roughly 2011. It's been rapidly coming undone, and I think the process, if if Saudi Arabia goes the way I think it'll go, I think the process will is about to really accelerate.
What then?
What then? This is, you know, this is how wars happen. You know, power vacuums open up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, forces pour in, other forces pour in to stop them, and then before you know it, you have a huge war going on. I mean, what will the U.S. do if ISIS or Al-Qaeda are poised to take control of 22% of the world's proven oil reserves, not to mention you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of advanced weaponry? Will the U.S. send in troops?
That was some kind of contingency plan at one time. I said, this is a few years back. One of our top people was talking about if the oil was threatened, we could land a bunch of troops into the oil-producing area, which is along the Gulf, and kind of let the rest of Saudi Arabia go to pot or something.
Well, that was that actually Nixon and Kissinger discussed that at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's foolish in the extreme. I mean, the American people are not going to support that. And to what end? To put the safeguard, the Al Saud, so our Americans going to die? So MBS can spend $550 million for another yacht? Or $350 million for another French chateau? You know, this is what Americans will be dying for? I don't think so. Americans don't want this. They don't want this at all. They're war weary. They know these wars are going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get the hell out. They're really just sick and tired of this nonsense. But what will the U.S. do?
Well, I don't know. I think about this a lot because in my spare time I write novels about the future, and I sort of you have this Eurasian combine, Russia and China, all the Turkic nations and Iran, sort of forming this global. I don't know what you call it, not an empire, but it's sort of the center of the world is shifting back to Asia. So where does that leave the U.S.? I mean, I guess back home where we started. That's one scenario.
Except, as you know, the U.S. itself is coming apart.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, the U.S. is in the middle of a huge political crack up that I personally think is structural rather than just on a purely political plane. So the U.S. in some ways is coming apart at the seams. I mean, the world is going through some significant changes. The 2008 financial crisis left the political structure severely weakened. Things are cracking up. People aren't happy. Growth has slowed. Ancient entities like the United Kingdom, which dates from 1707, I believe, is in danger of going to pieces. The European Union is under a great strain. So things are coming apart at the seams. I quite agree.
Well, it's like our oil strategy has been such a success that it's destroying the climate. Even here in the United States, the Southwest is sort of rapidly becoming desert. People still want to buy houses in Phoenix, Arizona. I don't know why, but the future does not look very good. Like you said, the United States is breaking apart too. Part of it is due to climate,
yes.
I think.
Well, climate, but also America is living under a constitution that dates from 1787,
mm-hmm.
and it's grossly in need of an overhaul. We essentially have a minority dictatorship. We have a Senate in which 54% of the population lives in just 10 states,
mm-hmm.
and yet they're outvoted 4-1 by the minority. We have an electoral college which triples the weight of small depopulated rural states.
And elects presidents like Trump with less vote than their opponent.
That's happened twice in the last 20 years.
And I think on that happy note, we're going to have to end this show. We've been talking with Daniel Lazar, author of a very interesting article, Is Saudi Arabia the Middle East Next Failed State? And that was in Consortium News, which I highly recommend. So thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And stay tuned. This is Fight the Empire, which you can do 24 hours a day at KBOO, your radio station.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, next it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and then at 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with author Dubravka Ugrešić about her new novel, Fox, and her revised and updated essay collection, American Fictionary. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.